Our speaker this morning is Dr. Myron Thurber. He's a licensed mental health counselor and a physical therapist, and he's in private practice in Washington, and he has experience counseling individuals, groups, families, and children, and he's also been in an outpatient service setting and also in a rehabilitation hospital. So he's worked in a variety of the inpatient outpatient settings as a physical therapist. And he's going to discuss today how he uses the M-Wave technologies, you know, with a variety of physical and mental health issues currently in his private practice.
Well, Carol, thank you, and thank you for those that have joined the call. I'm looking forward to spending a few minutes talking with you about how I integrate HeartMath, both tools and technology, into a wide variety of clients. I'm also working right now with the research team at HeartMath and other practitioners, and we're just putting the finishing touches on a program that will be launched starting May, actually, called HeartMath Interventions, where we speak more specifically on protocols for counselors, therapists, social workers, and healthcare professionals. Because as a consortium, we found that there is a great need to collaborate on how to use these tools and technologies for a wider variety of clients, not only in age, ethnicity, cultural backgrounds, but also a variety of diagnoses, and being able to gather not only anecdotal information, but also support research to help eventually gather a larger and larger database of information. Because I think we've all experienced the power in HeartMath, and yet there are times that we are challenged to know how to better utilize what we have as adjunctive to our own therapy modalities, as well as to help our clients. So I thought today what I'd do is just start out with a couple of experiences I've had recently, share some of those experiences, and then present to you a model that I use to help me decide how to use the tools and technologies with a variety of clients. So the first experience I'd like to relate to you happened just a couple of days ago. I was in my office, and a client that I've been working with came in for his regular scheduled appointment. It's a 29-year-old male. He struggles with pretty severe addiction problems. He also has Asperger's on the autistic spectrum disorders. I've been working with him in counseling and also doing neurofeedback with him. And he came in to just return his books and tell me that he'd no longer need our services. That was a red flag to me. His disposition was very depressed for him. He consented to come back into the office where we began to talk. And then he revealed that he had decided that day and was quite at peace with the fact that he was going to go home and commit suicide. He'd come to realization that someone he loved, that he was very prone to hurt them, and he couldn't live with himself if he hurt them, and so he decided that the best thing to do was to take his own life. At that point, as a practitioner, for those who've been in that situation, everything changes. We discussed how that changes confidentiality. My job then was to help him be safe. He was reluctant but agreed to stay with me until we could work out a solution, including calling our local crisis prevention team, which is our mental health providers that we need to go through in our local area when we have a suicidal client. So I told him that I needed to go in and get a conference phone so that we could make that conference call together and staff this case with the appropriate provider. So I walked into my office, and the first thing I did was I did a quick coherence for myself, because I knew I need to be as clear and as peaceful as I could. I've been in this situation before with other clients, and I knew I needed that help. And I appreciated having something that I had confidence in that could help me. Went in with the client, and we made the phone call together. But before we made that phone call, I asked permission then with that client to do a heart lock-in. And he was resistant. He was at peace with the fact that he was going to take his own life. But he allowed me to do that. We did that out loud. I did heart locking with him, and then we placed the call. What was interesting is as soon as that call was made, we had someone come on the line who was trying to gather his name and information and kept on messing up with his name. We both were able to laugh about it, about the difficulty in that, and it began to ease the situation. Now, in this particular situation, because the client was in sufficient turmoil and that safety was a big issue, then it was determined that he needed further assessment. It was determined that someone from our clinic would take him down to be further assessed, whether or not he would be put into an inpatient setting or not. And we proceeded that way. He did go into, and it was determined that he was able to be safe outside of an inpatient setting after he was appropriately assessed. And then he was able to come in soon thereafter, and we had another session. In that session, he agreed to do the heart math. We hooked him up to the M-Wave PC. He was able to maintain a high state of coherence watching the screen. And at the end, he stated, "I didn't know I could do so well." Again, the situation continued to improve as the person on the call who works in psychiatric mental health. We're carefully monitoring the situation with this client. And I don't know that we're completely out of the woods, nor will we be for a while. But I deeply appreciated the opportunity to have a tool that I could use so quickly to help me as a practitioner be clear in the approach to the client, to have a sense of confidence, as well as to be able to lend hope through a heart lock-in, literally be able to lend hope to a client that was hopeless at that time. It will go on from here. I'm not sure exactly how it will end up. But one of the interesting things about this is I was able to go home that night and sleep personally. And before, when I've had situations like this and haven't had tools such as HeartMath, I would have a sleepless night. So the tools not only helped me personally, it helped me professionally, and it also helped the client. And I find that one of the strengths of HeartMath. Another situation is with a pediatric client in an outpatient setting. The mother in this situation is a social worker, and she had a 9-year-old son, very bright young man, but had selective mutism. In a social setting, he was not able to speak or engage with other children in an appropriate manner. Developmentally, he was capable. He would be able to do that with his younger brother at home, with his parents, very close relatives, but outside of that, he wasn't able to communicate. So they brought him in order to introduce this to him. I recognized that he was uncomfortable trying to discuss or talk. I introduced HeartMath to him in the initial screen when you go to the M-Wave PC. Then down at the bottom left, the second to the bottom key is tutorial. And so I went to the tutorial, and in the upper right, the second box over, there's a box with a magnifying glass in called Science. And I click on Science, and there are some very short video clips in there. I find that very helpful sometimes in order to introduce to clients HeartMath interventions, as well as some of the science behind it. I tend to like the science, and sometimes I talk too much about the science, and I see my clients, their eyes glaze over, and I realize that I've gone far beyond the mark. So I simply use those video clips and discuss a little bit in between each video clip sometimes to make sure they understand the concept. And then I go right into, I do a baseline assessment with my clients. Depends on the client. Because I have both a mental health background and a medical background from physical therapy, then sometimes I'll do something more on a medical, so I can use it in a SOAP note and use it to communicate with the medical community, sometimes I'll just do a simple 2-minute baseline where I'll ask them to sit quietly, and then I just have, and they are not watching the screen at that point. I just have them sit quietly, and I just monitor what their coherence ratios are for that 2 minutes. I'll have the sound off so I can get an idea of what their coherence ratios are. Personally, I like to look also at the power spectrum so I can look and see, are they primarily with a peak on the far left, which is more of a sympathetic arousal? Are they dispersed across the spectrum that it shows? That I see that more with people like who have Lyme's disease, a chronic fatigue syndrome, who have very low variability in the heart rate. And so I'll look at that. And this particular individual had extremely high sympathetic arousal, this young man did. So we introduced it. I introduced him using the coherence coach to help him get a sense of paced breathing, and then had him work with that. I also incorporated using Santre technique or World technique, which is a projective technique that I use with some of these traumatized kids. It's a small tray filled with sand in my office. Then I have probably over 1,000 small action figures, small toys that they can put in the sand, and they can show me what their life is like without having to talk. In this particular instance, in the sand tray, he chose a very small figure for himself in comparison to his mother and father and his brother. And he put himself to the side, facing pretty much away from the family, and whereas the other family members were all interacting together. I asked him to do a trade, just showing him what his world was like. And that gave me a visual representation of a projective technique of how he saw himself. I worked with him for about 10 sessions, and it happened to fall across the Christmas holidays, and then his parents didn't bring him back in. And I called his father a few weeks later and wanted to find out how he's doing. He said, oh, he's doing great. We didn't need to bring him back in. And he wanted to know if I needed him to come back in. I said at that point, well, I'd leave that up to him. It wasn't until about a month later that we had a new client come in, another young man, and it so happened that his mother was a teacher. And the teacher had this young man with selective mutism in her classroom the previous year. And she said the reason she came in and brought her son in, who had some anxiety problems, is because she had walked into the classroom where this young man was with the selective mutism. And whereas the previous year she could not get him to engage with other clients, he would not make eye contact very much, he would never talk, she walked into the classroom with this young man this year, and he was talking with the other kids. He was doing a presentation with another student in front of the classroom, and she was just so shocked at how he had changed and that he was happy and was doing so well. And that was good feedback for me as a practitioner to know how he was doing. Since we have someone on the line who also works in a chronic pain clinic, another interesting aspect working with chronic pain is the ability it helped me. I did both biofeedback as well as some of the educational component in the pain clinic. And then I also did some of the physical therapy component, depends on what they needed. We had a multidisciplinary team with a social worker, a clinical psychologist, a biofeedback practitioner, physical therapy, occupational therapy, recreational therapy, a chiropractor on the team, as well as we had a medical director that would handle the medications. In several instances, we had great success with a disorder called a regional complex pain disorder, where following injury or surgery, someone often gets excruciating pain in an extremity where they can no longer tolerate touch, heat, cold, those sorts of things. Extremely painful and uncomfortable. A particular individual that was in the pain clinic was a nurse who had been in so much pain that she had been basically prosecuted for taking other patients' pain medication, suspended her license, and was just in a lot of emotional as well as physical turmoil. She came into our pain clinic and had tried several different types of desensitization, types of medication, neuroleptics such as Neurontin, and had moderate to little success, also had significant sleep disorder. We were able to use HeartMath along with a very careful regimen of systematic desensitization that was done by the occupational and physical therapy team. And she was able to eventually begin to move the extremity more appropriately. She began to get muscle strength. And she attributed much of the change to, one, being able to increase sleep and be able to sleep better. And she attributed that to being able to use the quick coherence technique. And then she was able to make some decisions and work through the process using freeze frame technique. Got to the point where she was able then to work towards return to work in a significant way and resolve some of the emotional and mental and actually legal issues associated with her condition. Likewise, another area that was very helpful besides the chronic back pain and neck pain, shoulder pain that are typical in pain clinics. One of the questions we often have is when a client, and this particular client I'm thinking of, had a back injury, it was very difficult to ascertain what the full extent of her pain was. She participated with physical therapy and occupational therapy, but reported that she couldn't push herself. It was too painful. She couldn't make very much progress. In our weekly meetings, the concern was that we wouldn't be able to help her return back to work. What was interesting is I was also working with, at that time, we had freeze frame was the program. It hadn't progressed to the M-Wave PC. She was showing remarkable progress with her coherence ratios. What was interesting is I could demonstrate and mark how her coherence ratios were improving. Often during those settings, she would complain about pain, that oh, it's so painful and it's getting worse and I can hardly sit here. And I'm watching her heart rate variability and the power spectrum, and it's showing no increase in sympathetic arousal. It's showing no disruption in rhythm. And she liked doing the biofeedback that we were doing with her using the heart rate variability. But eventually, she was dismissed from the program without showing significant success, that we weren't able to return her back to work. And it was just curious to me, the discrepancy. And it wasn't till 2 or 3 months later that a private investigator that had been sent onto the case from our state labor and industries showed us tapes of this individual who was running a lawn mowing service. And they showed the tape of this person taking the lawnmower out of the back of the car and doing heavy physical labor and working very fast, very vigorously in it. And it was just a nice confirmation to me that when the state showed that indeed this person was able to work, what was interesting and reassuring to me is that what I had seen in the heart rate variability of this person actually had made progress was probably accurate. And when we get that discrepancy between what is subjective information and what is objective information, then sometimes it allows us to make decisions that are very hard to make in a pain clinic. So those are some examples of different kinds of applications I've done, and I'm sure that there are many others working with depression or anxiety or bipolar disorders or other psychiatric diagnosis. So I've had success working with autism that has a unique set of situations. I had a 14-year-old young man who was autistic, did a lot of heart rate variability along with some neurofeedback. At one point, he got very angry with me, which was very unusual for this client, and basically reported that now he was starting to cry at commercials on TV and that he wanted to have friends and that he had really had an emotional awakening. And his anger was based on the fact that he didn't know what to do with all these new emotions and that he felt like it was directly related to what we were doing here. And he had to process through what it was like to basically become aware of a whole range of emotions that he found very powerful and very strong that he had been unaware of before. And he had to work through that. And, of course, it had a positive outcome, work closely with the family and others and how to begin to integrate those emotions and to help him understand what was going on. But a lot of that, again, came through not only the neural feedback we were doing, but the heart rate variability, which was the majority of what we did with that particular client. So what I'd like to do for the next 10 or 15 minutes is try to talk you through a model I use in how to decide what to use and how to use the M-Wave PSR or the M-Wave PC with a variety of clients. And the model I use is one that I have adapted from a couple of practitioners. One of them is Sterling Gerber. Another one is Laszlo, who's another psychotherapist. And I like to look at the presentation of a client and ask myself, is this person presented as over-aroused with things like anxiety, fugue of thought, hyperactivity, addictive behaviors, or are they under-aroused? Is it apathy, low motivation, hypersomnolence, or sleeping for great periods of time, low energy, constant fatigue? So I break it up between how approaching them from an over-aroused state or an under-aroused state. And another way I look at these clients is I like to look at them, are they primarily, do they have a cognitive problem? Is it basically overthinking or fugue of thought? And are they detached from their emotions? So they're cognitively driven. Or is the person emotionally driven? Are they unable to think clearly and are in the drama of life? Are they emotionally in upheaval to the point that they cannot think creatively or act in a way that's self-efficacious? So I look at, is it cognitive, emotional, and then the third is behavioral. Is it simply a behavioral problem? Are they in habits that, such as addictions, or other kinds of actions that are getting them in trouble? And it's not that they're not able to think or that they have major problems with emotions primarily, but they just simply have behavioral concerns. One way I do this is sometimes I even grid this out where I have on the upper left I'll have over-arousal, on bottom left I'll have under-aroused or low motivation. And then I'll have a column for each cognitive, emotional, or affective, and then behavioral. And then I like to look at the goals. So if I have someone who's, for example, overly aroused in the cognitive realm, then my goal is to have a quiet mind and help them connect with calm emotions, how to reconnect with their emotions that are going to help them remain calm and peaceful. If I have an affective problem that's over-aroused, then my goal might be to balance the emotion and be able to help them think clearly and creatively. If I have a behavioral problem that's in the over-aroused state, then the goal is to control behavior to regulate thoughts and emotions. When I've got, on the other hand, I've got someone who is in the under-aroused category, such as cognitively, they're unable to think, they're mentally foggy, then our goal might be for a clear mind and, again, in touch with positive emotions. Affectively, if someone is dysthymic, unable to connect with any kind of positive emotion, there's a condition we call alexithymia, where they really don't perceive much else besides in the emotion realm besides body sensations. They might have a vague sense of irritation and report it as stomach ache. Or anger, they might have, again, that sense that they're angry, but they don't process emotions. So in that under-aroused affective state, then the goal might be to develop trust that positive emotions are valid, that they can sense something positive, and that they can think clearly and use that to make decisions. In someone who is behaviorally under-motivated, this is someone who knows what they need to do, maybe even desires to do it, but are unable to do anything about it, then the goal might be to motivate or encourage and to them to access, again, creative solutions or to begin to act on what they desire. Now, when I lay out then the idea of over-aroused, under-aroused, and the correlates of cognitive, affective, and behaviorally, what the goals are or how we can work with it, then I use a working alliance model where I'll engage the client and about what their goals are and how we address it. Now, with heart math tools and techniques, the tools of neutral and quick coherence are very powerful tools in the moment for a client to begin to decrease an over-aroused state. Whereas we look at the tools of attitude breathing, heart lock-in, and freeze frame can actually be more restructuring or rebuilding techniques. So being able to use them, I can plug those into what the goals are in the moment. So if I have someone who's simply over-aroused and they need to be able to think clearly, I'll start by teaching them neutral or quick coherence. When I have them watch the M-Wave PC or use an M-Wave PSR, I will, because they're over-aroused, simplify everything. I will turn off the sound. I will only show them the screen. I might just show them the coherence coach, and that's all I'll show them. Or I might show them just the screen that simply shows the rise and fall in heart rate. And I will make sure that I do not add to the over-aroused state. Find, for example, when people are highly anxious, it's much better that I don't use that first screen that has the coherence ratios and it shows whether or not they're in the zone or not. I would much rather use a much simpler screen for them to watch because I don't want them to feel like they're competing with themselves. I don't want them to overanalyze, overthink it. I simply want them to observe what is happening and how it changes as they apply the tools or the techniques. On the other hand, if I have somebody who is under-aroused, this might be someone who's dysthymic, someone who tends to be depressed, somebody who's under-motivated, then I will turn on the sound, I will put the bells and whistles, I'll try to do anything I can to get them to engage in the process. And as long as it's not overwhelming, sometimes we have people who are both anxious and depressed, then I'll try to gauge how much stimulus to use in the therapeutic process to help them achieve success. So I will then use a more stimulating screen. I might also introduce the emotion visualizer as a way to get them to engage mentally or visually in the process. I'll often start with very short sessions, and I'll catch them, for example, somebody who has low motivation. As soon as it begins to, the green and blue lights begin to flash or the sound, tones begin to do that, I might, and I'm watching the screen, and because there's a delay in the coherence ratio, because it's cumulative, I'll watch, and once I see that they're going to go into, become successful in the coherence ratios, then I will prompt them, pay attention now, you're doing well, and this is what's happening. And sometimes I'll pause or stop it then, and just encourage them, let them know that, that what they're doing matters, that even a positive or a desire to feel a positive emotion, even if they don't recognize it, will help them. Then I can begin to motivate someone who has very low arousal state and work with them. Same thing with someone who's highly anxious, that's competitive with the screens or with themselves, who are trying very hard to relax. Then, again, I might use no more than maybe 5 to 7 minutes to begin with, because I find also that they're working so hard that they'll actually fatigue out if I try to do like a 20-minute session to begin with. I also use the books. I really like the inside story as something that's fairly inexpensive that I can send home with a client if they're not able to digest one of the transforming books. Then I'll have them use the inside story. And if you're not familiar with that particular product, I would recommend that you also get the CD that goes along with it. It's kind of a PowerPoint kind of presentation that you can utilize with your clients and work through a little bit at a time. The books are written simply. They work great with pediatric and clients as well as my adults. A text we used when I was teaching at the University of North Texas, and I was teaching there, I taught several courses that used, and we taught the freeze frame at that time. And that was a very useful product. So it's called the Inside Story. It's less expensive, especially if you're in a clinic where sending materials home with clients might be a problem. Then these are less than $10 a piece. So if they don't come back, we can bear the brunt of the cost. That's one that I use then to educate a little bit at a time, so in these short sessions. As far as the amount of time I use with clients, I found that when my clients tend to have just an over-aroused problem, more on the anxiety disorders, things like that, then usually between 4, maybe up to 10 sessions, I often have pretty good success with these clients. If I have a client that is under-aroused, they're dysthymic, they have depression, I find in my clinic it takes me longer to help these clients learn how to incorporate the tools and technologies and techniques on a regular basis. And the clients just take longer for me to get to a point where they're ready for discharge. With behavior problems, depends on the severity of the behavior, depends on how long the behavior has been in place. So that's another one that's hard to say exactly how many sessions. When I did my dissertation work with social anxiety and I worked with music performance anxiety, we used primarily the handheld PSRs, and it took an average of about 3.5 to 4 sessions for these students to not only learn the techniques. I spent about 30 to 40 minutes, but it took them about 3 sessions to learn the techniques. And they reported on average about a 70% reduction in performance anxiety. And again, a 60 to 70% improvement in the nature of their performance. That was their perception. Very effective. And again, that was an over-aroused state, primarily in the cognitive disorder areas, and those tend to resolve fairly quickly. Looks like we're at a quarter to 12, so I think, Carol, what I'd like to do is go ahead and maybe open this up for questions and comments, and I think that would be a good thing to do. Just for your information, if you're interested in having much more specific intervention techniques, like I said, we're developing a program now called HeartMath Interventions, and we're kicking that off in May preliminary, and it will be something you can probably email Carol about if you're interested in it. We'll be offering those once a month, and it's basically three sessions, an hour orientation, then 2 weeks later we have a 3 to 4 hour training session going through all the science of HeartMath. And then 2 weeks after that we have a 3 to 4 hour session where we actually go specifically diagnosis by diagnosis and talk more specifically about how to use them, how to do baseline testing, other specific clinical applications and things like that. So that's something that's going to be available. So we're starting in May as our first class. So that might be interesting to you if you're interested in that. All right, I'll turn that back to you, Carol.
Great. Thanks, Myron.